a lot of guys that have some South Asian channels, or they have some Korean channels, or they've got some Hispanic channels, and it's smart, and there's demand, but that's a tough sell on its own, and you really have to have real aggregation associated with that.
Relevant content is more valuable than irrelevant content, because irrelevant content has no value.
These are the voices of Shelley Palmer and Scott Patterson. They were panelists on Emerging Sector Spotlight, State of IPTV Technology Development. I'm Jason Lopez of podtech.net at Convergence 2.0, presented by The Deal. The conference was held at the Paley Center for Media in New York City on September 17, 2007. After the panel, I approached Shelley Palmer, who's Managing Director of Advanced Media Ventures Group, and Scott Patterson, CEO of Jump TV. They were just finishing lunch. Scott Patterson starts first.
I think you can't just have the long tail. In our view, you've got to have some mainstream content that really attracts viewers. But then through navigation and design and through affiliation, you can drive people to peel back the onion more so and find that long tail, find that extra interview. If it's a sporting franchise, the interview with the coach, the dressing room interview, the practice a week before, the practice a day afterwards, the interview with the people that prepared the turf and why the turf's different. Kind of the real fanatical sports fan wants stuff that really is long tailish in nature, and to them it's very premium and very important to them, and they're really engaged when they're interacting with that. Same thing for the Bangladeshi living in New Jersey, who, by the way, our logs show that our biggest traffic is every morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. What are they watching? The 7 p.m. news live. It's really neat. They want to have that connection to their home country, even though they're proud that they've immigrated to the United States. I had a lunch with the head of Zenith Optimedia and took them through the Jump TV story. And she said, when you talked about the emotional engagement, she said, I buy it. I buy that Bangladeshi is simply more emotionally engaged watching the cricket match, the political debate, news from their home country when they live away from home. And therefore, if my ad, one of their customers' ads, is in front of that content or in the middle of that content, I'm grabbing more of a mind share. I'm getting some credit, either consciously or subconsciously, of bringing that content to them.
So the job of all media is to grab share of mind and translate it to share of wallet. That's its job. That's its total job. And no one's going to argue that relevant content is more valuable than irrelevant content, because irrelevant content has no value. Only content that is at least semi-relevant has a value. The question is, it's a circular logic question, and it goes like this. If targeted advertising is really, really important, the technology is sufficiently simplistic that it will be commoditized. And if it doesn't work and it's not important, then it doesn't matter. So then you have to ask yourself, what's the premium that an advertiser is willing to pay for some level of customization? And if that's true, are you enough value add to justify the investment in that technology right now? Because right now it's fairly early. So it's simply dollars and cents. I can send a relatively relevant ad in and accomplish what I want to accomplish, as opposed to a highly targeted add-in and have a huge cost associated with it for no demonstrable benefit. And so this idea of hyper-targeting is kind of fun, but it's more of a fantasy than a reality. When you put pen to paper, you either commoditize targeting or it doesn't work well enough to command the premium. That's thing one. Thing two is long tail content is fantastic. In the idea that you'll find some very niche players, people who are interested in very niche things, that's all great. My problem with all of this has nothing actually to do with whether it's an obscure title or non-obscure title. The question comes down to, is on demand a valid methodology for sponsored programming? Because there simply isn't enough advertising inventory, no matter how you deliver it, in order to justify the kind of costs that the content, associated with the content when you aggregate it. And that's the model that's a little bit at question now. Jump TV does a fantastic job getting that stuff out there. And if they sell ads to an aggregated 7 million users or 7 million views, okay, then they've got 7 million users, and that's like a program that's doing a 5 rating with an 8 share on a given night in a given market. In a big market, obviously. But if you were going to break that up into a million little pieces, you know, then you're going to break up, I mean, Scott, you can actually comment on it, but then you have to break up the ad sales team, you have to break up the billing, you have to break up the affidavits, you have to break up the metrics. There's, I mean, 20 people are going to be talking to you as opposed to one person talking to you. The economies of scale really aren't there.
That part I agree with 100%, which is why our strategy at JumpTV has been to have hundreds of little niches, aggregate them, and have the same theme to an advertiser, which is domestic audience, heavy emphasis on premium content that's emotionally engaged, in our case, leading with international TV and sports, because you're right. And that's the challenge, frankly, for most entrepreneurs out there that have a good idea. And there's a lot of guys that have some South Asian channels, or they have some Korean channels, or they've got some Hispanic channels. And it's smart, and there's demand, but that's a tough sell on its own. And you really have to have real aggregation associated with that.
No, advertisers need something other than a waste model right now, because new media, advanced media, any way you want to describe what's happening now, is 99% of the press, and it's 0.01% of the revenue base. So everybody wants to jump on this. And I'm very bullish on the testing, but we're only getting test money right now. Start to show me mainstream money. The number one buyer of canvas in the world, the Coca-Cola Bottling Company. They buy more canvas than anybody. They put up more Coke banners on canvas than you could possibly imagine. You could probably wrap it around the world several times. What can we do for them? Well, I'd like to have a fraction of their canvas buying budget against my podcast, against my on-demand video, against my on-demand online lean forward video distribution play, whatever flavor it is. I'd like to have a fraction of the canvas buying budget. Forget about their actual television budget, which is, you know, astro dollars. So, you know, how do we get the real, how do we get real money from a real advertiser? And the only one way, demonstrate value. If they have a return on investment, an ROAS, return on advertising spend, that they can measure and demonstrate, they'll give you all the money that you can ask for. It's incumbent upon us to actually demonstrate that this technology and this content overlaid on this technology is a value proposition that gives them a higher or at least a similar return on their advertising spend as, let's say, television or some other medium they might be in.
I mean, we certainly have a view of the future, but we'd like to think we're nimble enough that if it's not working as well as we'd hope, to try other things. We really are in just a massive test mode, generally speaking, to try to be as creative as possible with respect to everything from a merchandising perspective, from a business model perspective, until we find really the thing that really takes off. We grow every day. We're up to 75,000 subscribers. We're just starting to get some world-class advertisers as we just kicked off the advertising part June 1st. But we could look differently than we do today a few months from now.
On the same panel, Tom Westdyke, Managing Director at CIT, Communications, Media, and Entertainment. Later in the interview, I ask him about whether we could be in for another internet bubble, but first, what's the value of IPTV?
The value from a network perspective is the delivery of services that people are used to in major markets from their cable television or their satellite provider out into more rural markets where those services traditionally have not been available because of the costs involved. IPTV from a network perspective allows the telephone provider in some of these smaller markets to deliver a video product right over their network, so that instead of just providing voice or data to a customer, they can now provide three products to them. That's the one side of it. The other side is similar to what AT&T is doing in terms of it's just a new video product. It has a lot more interactivity with the internet, so the ability to pull content from different sources and to provide a fuller experience than traditional television is another thing that IPTV provides.
Now, is it helpful to pull back a little bit and even include in this discussion not only IPTV, but any video on the internet?
You know, there's a lot of convergence out there, as I'm sure everyone's used to hearing. How content is distributed, whether it be over a traditional network, whether it be over IPTV or be over the internet, you know, that whole mix is clouding. And the technology of, you know, hooking your television not only to a set-top box, but directly to the internet, perhaps, is certainly changing. And, you know, consumers are demanding video content and social interaction both on the television and on their computers. And, you know, IPTV is one way to kind of merge those two technologies together and to give the consumer really what they want.
Now, how can you make money with this? In the discussion that we just heard, we had Scott Patterson, Shelley Palmer. They were sort of going at it about the idea of the long tail,
right,
and whether or not it actually applies to video and the kind of advertising that you can put on that video.
Well, I mean, I think from my perspective, I think, you know, we certainly see examples where if you provide people with more service, they're willing to pay for it. So from the subscriber's perspective, you know, more services are provided, more connectivity is provided. It either keeps that subscriber with you as the provider of that service, keeps them from going somewhere else, which helps you amortize your investment, or it also allows you to charge more. So from the subscription perspective, there's an opportunity to make money. From an advertising perspective, I mean, they were kind of going back and forth in terms of the viability there. Hard for me to say, but I will say that when you talk about the shift of the ad dollar from traditional media, traditional broadcast television being somewhat part of that, but from newspapers, from radio into television, and the more segmented it can be and the more targeted it can be, that is clearly the trend. And you know, these networks provide people the ability to target and to be more focused with their ad dollar.
One last question here for you, Tom. Is there a danger of an internet bubble around IPTV, video distribution, that sort of thing?
That's a really good question. We didn't really get into it on the panel, but in the financial industry, obviously everyone's asking themselves that very question. We like to think that the fundamentals of where we are now are much better than they were, say, 5 or 6 years ago when the last bubble took place. And by that we mean we're building these networks and we're spending this capital off of businesses that are already producing cash flow. This is not a greenfield opportunity in a lot of cases. In a lot of cases, what AT&T is doing, they're making a huge investment to provide this new product, but they're also leveraging off, you know, the millions and millions of users they have on their existing network, which is producing a tremendous amount of cash for them. You know, that model is being replicated in smaller markets and by smaller providers. This is not necessarily a build it and they will come type of situation. It's much more of a additive product to an existing business that's cash flowing. And the other piece of the puzzle we see is that, you know, video and social networking and the convergence of all this media is really driving, from a network perspective, it's driving the bandwidth demand to catch up with the supply. The big problem last time around was there was a tremendous amount of capital spent and it was way ahead of its time from a demand perspective. Now we're starting to see a catch up in demand based on all these applications. So, you know, nobody knows for sure, but I'd like to think that we're basing this new kind of surge on much more fundamentals, solid fundamentals from a financing perspective than we did last time.
Tom Westdyke is Managing Director at CIT. Shelley Palmer, Managing Director of Advanced Media Ventures Group, and Scott Patterson, CEO of Jump TV. I'm Jason Lopez of Podtech.net at the Convergence 2.0 conference held September 17th, 2007 in New York City, presented by The Deal.